the last topic today, and we're going to hear about nurturing language learning at Mohawk Language Nest. And so Margaret is here, and Emily turned, and she'll come in a little late, and Eve.
So, do you want me to start? So welcome to our presentation on the Mohawk Language Nest. My name is Eve Okura. I'm a PhD student in linguistics here at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. And I met these wonderful people at the Mohawk Akwesasne Mohawk Reservation in upstate New York, kind of on the border of Canada. Last summer, they let me visit and learn from them about their language nest.
Hi, my name is Margaret Chaplin. My Mohawk name is Gaftehlaguas. My Mohawk name is Gaftehlaguas, and I'm a Bear Clan from Akwesasne, Mohawk. And I've been teaching at the language nest for about 2.5 years. And first of all, I was working at other daycares on the reserve, but they were English. It was all English, and we only had maybe 2 hours of Mohawk with a dudda. We call our duddas our grandparents, our grandmothers. So our grandmothers or grandfathers. So we had 2 hours a day, and I would be going to work, and I would feel like, these kids need more speaking, because I would be speaking with them. And so I was approached by one of the teachers from the Freedom School and asked me, would you come over and, you want to come over and teach? And I kind of was a little bit hesitant about it, because I was only working part-time at the other places, and I was free. I was free to take care of my mom and with my own children. So I went over there. So I was working at both places. I was working at this daycare, and I was working at the language nest. So finally, I just quit, and I worked at the language nest. Because my parents, both are fluent speakers. I grew up in a home where they were speaking all the time. But I never myself spoke. But I knew the language. I could understand, read, and write. But then I started working at a nursing home. I worked there for 7 years. And a lot of our duddas there didn't really speak. I would be like, come on, you need to speak. You know, I would speak to them in Mohawk. And a few words they would speak in Mohawk, and then they would make fun of me, laugh at me, and we'd joke around about it. But then so when I started working at the Freedom School, it was with the little kids, so we just spoke Mohawk all the time. And I was kind of like lost a lot of it, but working there, I spoke more, and then I know a lot of our language, and I love it. I love it there, but I was hearing somebody speaking. I had that problem with my mother when she would come into the room. Even now, I would go English. She walks into the language nest, and I just start talking English, and I have no idea really why that is, but I love it. I love working with the children, and we have fun. There's right there with all our children right there. Their ages 1 to 4 years old, and we're pretty free there. We're able to take them places. We can even take them to the store if we want. We put them in a car seat, and we take them outside for walks. We take them to parks. We do just about, we're just like parents there. So me as a teacher there, there's three of us. There's myself, Emma, and Waheso. She's another co-teacher. And then we have one dudda that comes in. Well, as I started, I was there maybe about 5-6 months. And we call each other, the children call us Ista. Ista is mother. So each of us were being called Ista. Then all of a sudden, they start calling me Duda.
Which is elder.
So I'm a Duda now. And it's really funny, because we still have our other Duda, but it's really respectful that way. And I don't know what else to say, but I love where I work, and I really encourage it in our community. I go to my my nieces, and they don't speak, but her children go to a regular school on the reserve, but they're in a Mohawk language, and they speak. And I speak with them, and it's just, I love it. We just speak and talk to each other, and like her mother doesn't even really understand, but we try to encourage her to understand what they're saying also, and she's just so amazed. And the children at the Freedom School, Eve came to visit us, and she did some testing with our children, and some of the testing that she done with the older kids was good, because they could understand where, you know, behind a person or ahead of a person, they could interpret it, what the picture was saying. But the younger ones, it's all verbal. So it was like from, say, 8 months old. The first one, we had an 8 month old, so we stopped it there. Now we're starting at 1 year old, because it was too hard where, you know, the child had to be taking a nap at 10 o'clock, and then the others were trying to climb outside, wanting to go and play. So we had to kind of like limit it to 1 year old. But we were talking last night, I think it's better the sooner that you can get them in there. Even though, you know, most of our homes are English speaking, the language is really starting to, people are really wanting to speak again. And but it's so important that you know, before when they're infants, you're speaking right to them, and they get the language and they're understanding, and it's a whole different mind, it's a whole different thinking. It's a whole different life. And I was saying, when I'm in the nest, it's like going into another world, and you're there, and you're in a home, and you have these children, and you're speaking to them, and then you go in your, after the, you know, the day is done, you get in your car and you go, it's almost like you go back out into this world, and it's really hard. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Maggie. Yeah, as Maggie was saying, she was explaining to me, it feels like two different worlds where they're speaking the language and they're teaching the culture in the language nest, and then they go out into the rest of their lives, and it's hard to transition back into English and then deal with all of the things in modern society. And how it'd be easiest to just get to be immersed in that all the time, but how to balance those two has been interesting. Some of the things they mentioned to me that helped, and you can interject and fix things that I say, but what I liked what she pointed out, that without even telling the children to start calling her Dada or Elder, they just did it on their own one day. The children suddenly just one day went from calling her Ista to Dada. And it was really cool to see that they at least internalized the language enough to be able to make that judgment when they felt like she was a Dada. Some of the things that they said helped were starting the kids as young as possible, teaching the culture, it's not just the language. And the Freedom School she's mentioning is the Mohawk Akwesasne Freedom School. It's a Mohawk language immersion school. It goes from what grade?
It goes from kindergarten up until, I think it's grade 8.
Grade 8.
Yeah.
And the language nest is on the same grounds as the Freedom School. So the children can go from the language nest to the Freedom School when they graduate. So there is follow-up, which is great. And then in the summers, the capacity of the language nest is 10 children. And in the summer, there were 6 when I was there. But some of the other children, maybe 5 or 6 years old, will sometimes show up at the language nest if their parents need that. Well, the kids from the Freedom School. And the theme of this conference is language and well-being. And I remember when I was there, they were explaining to me that it's not just about the language. It's about, you know, giving the children a nurturing place where they can feel loved and associate positive feelings with their language. They also have, this is a picture of what it used to look like. They said they fixed it up some, and there's like a full kitchen on this side. It's like a little home.
It's a double-wide trailer, actually.
Yeah. But it feels like a little home. There's a kitchen here, and then there are a couple of bedrooms where the kids take naps or play, and then they have all their toys there. Let's see. Then there's a, and you can pronounce, see, I'm not good with the Mohawk pronunciation, but Maggie can, the name of the school, and the...
It's Owila'neha Chikanosa, that means the baby place, the home of the baby, home for the babies.
And there's a parental packet information form that parents have to read and sign before they can bring their child, basically committing. Is there anything about parental commitment that you want to mention? Or?
Not too much. We talk every day with them. know, tell them a little bit what they learned. We really encourage them when they come in to pick them up to at least speak to them in Mohawk, and you know, how was their day? Sagon, Gunalunkwa. It's always when they're leaving too, it's always like we say, oh no, Gunalunkwa, and then until tomorrow. You know, they always are really, it's a nice place.
And I neglected to mention that Mohawk is a polysynthetic Iroquoian language, and they said some interesting things. One of the challenges in teaching the children are that because it's polysynthetic, there's the adult Mohawk way of speaking with all the verb prefixes and suffixes, where there's baby Mohawk, baby
yeah,
talk
like
Mohawk.
Yeah, like ee. They'll say ee means I. Probably, there's, we'll say, if they want something to more to eat, say we're going to have it on meal. Sego de waga de hunjo ni sego. Sego de waga de hunjo ni kunaho de ongege. That means I would like some more to eat. And we encourage them to say all that when they want something. You know, we'll say it with them, and then they'll just follow through with it, even though they're at that age, that level. Because when they go into the next grade, into kindergarten, they go right. It's just across the yard. There's another school. They go right into there, and they're really amazed that they know the prefixes. They know the words. It's not just ee. It's not ee. Ongigen, ee, I, you know, me, ee, it's not that way anymore. It's, when they got skull, I will eat.
Right. And
they asked.
They were saying, like, sometimes it's hard to know when kids are new to the language, do you use the baby talk with them? Will they be able to understand it better? Or do you use adult Mohawk, which is sometimes a lot harder for one word? It's a long descriptive string. I mean, they were saying, like, even the word for banana means fruit that is bent. You know, everything is descriptive and uses complex morphology, even for a common noun sometimes. So, let's see. And, oh yeah, that was the ista and the thing. This is one of the stages they have in between the language nest and the school, where they do fundraisers and performances. Some of the challenges, did you want to start on that? Do you want me to talk?
Go ahead.
So some of the challenges they talked about was having different age ranges. You know, when you have infants, they have different needs. They need to be carried and fed and napping all the time. And then you have four-year-olds that want to run around and play. It's really hard to manage a group of both of those. And through a lot of different languages I've talked to, and with the Mohawk language nest here, one of the challenges is having enough people. So, and having enough time to focus on the language when you're taking kids to the bathroom and feeding them and cleaning up after them constantly. Anyone who has little kids or who has had them or who has watched little kids knows it's not realistic to be able to focus on teaching kids something when you're constantly caring for them some of the time. And so having more help and staff really helps. You can share that burden. Just the physical, practical logistics of taking care of little children combined with the language makes it a rewarding but even more challenging endeavor than a regular daycare. Staffing, needing more teachers, and another challenge they mentioned is that sometimes people who have stronger language abilities don't have the energy to work with little children. You know, some of the elders, and also there are people who can speak the language, but they just either don't want to or can't for physical or whatever reasons work with little kids. And just finding more people who both know the language and are willing to work with little kids and are good with little kids. So another challenge they mentioned is the gap. So they'll accept 1 to 4-year-olds because it is so difficult to take care of the really young infants. At the same time, Maggie was telling me there's that gap between birth and a year old where kids aren't getting exposed to the language, and wanting to fill that as well. And thinking that perhaps it would be useful to have more language nests, but again, that would require resources and human resources as well.
Here, when the children come in, the parents take their jackets off, and they come in, and we'll have breakfast for them, and we do everything. We do all the cooking, and we do like all the naps, take them to the bathroom, whatever they need. All the snacks, and a lot of times if there's one, usually there's one or two that, you know, they're busy. They want to be climbing here and there, And so we bring them right, they come, you know, they're always with us. So they're in the kitchen climbing around trying to stir whatever we're making, making Play-Doh or making bread or anything. They're just right in there with us all the time.
And it's kind of like the Leanne Hinton bringing our languages home idea of creating a natural home-like environment for the children to learn the language instead of formally sitting them down and giving them classroom lessons. So so while I was there, we did a little acquisition study activity. It was a picture task activity based on McDaniel et al. 1996 and also Heaton and Shoyon, I think 2017. Raina Heaton here in our department and one of her Kaktukel speaking friends in Guatemala did a similar study on a Kaktukel immersion school. We decided to try it with the language nest where we would show children two pictures side by side and then Maggie or one of the other teachers would ask in Mohawk, point to the one or point to the wolf or point to the fish and the child would point to it and we would mark how many of the pictures they got right. We tested nouns, adjectives, verbs, and then basic sentence structure as well. It would be interesting to look at some more of the morphology. Pronouns paradigm would be interesting to look at, but we didn't get a chance to do that yet. And then there was a production component as well, where the child was just shown one picture and asked in Mohawk, what is that? And then they would answer Mohawk. So these were the results. One of the children, he was too little. He was just like a year old and didn't want to participate, so he didn't have to. So the three, child three and child four, I think were about 2 years old. And yeah. Child one, two, and five were 3 or 4 years old. So you can see the differences here of those who have just spent even a year more in the language nest, getting 80% of the vocabulary correct for the comprehension, as opposed to half, you know, the child three was new to the language nest. Let's see. Then child three ran away for the production component of the test. That's an interesting thing working with little kids. It's very unpredictable. If I'd known how hard it was going to be, I don't know if I still would have wanted to do language nest, but I would have prepared differently. But if they don't want to do it, you can't, you know, and they have the freedom to choose not to do it. So if they get up and want to run away and play, that's what happens. So we don't have child three's production. We do have these, and it's interesting to see that child one and child two, you know, they have about 80%. Oops, about 80% for comprehension. Let's see, and then for production, child one has a similar amount, and then child two. I guess I don't have the the transitive sentences here below. They're just two transitive sentences, and the ones who had weak vocabulary also didn't understand the transitive sentences. But those with strong vocabulary got the transitive sentences correct as well. So they could, basic coding strategies between subject and object in a transitive sentence. And then for production, here we see child four and child five. As expected, the production went down. And this is a little less expected, but for child three and child four, you could almost wonder if it's just pure chance that they got about half of it right. Child four has a little more than 50%, but let's see. And child two, but as expected, the production isn't as strong as comprehension, but they're still able to produce some words on their own. And they're young, and they're new to the language nest, and the focus is to just expose them to language as much as possible in preparation for the immersion school. And they did get feedback from the immersion school that the children coming from the language nest had were stronger in understanding and using pronouns than children who had not attended the language nest. This was just an initial experimental look at the language nest, how it's working, and what the children are acquiring. And it would be nice to do one when they're in full session with all 10 children, maybe a longitudinal study someday.
Try to really, you know, like when we take in the applications, we look at your children, are they going into the freedom school? I mean, not that we want to pick or choose that way, but it's nice that, you know, you want to continue that on. And a lot of, there's about half of the parents that don't speak Mohawk at all at home. But very little, like they want to start to learn. But so, you know, a lot of these children, when they leave the building, it's all English. The basic is say, hello, on goodbye, I love you. And it's very basic when they go home. So maybe try to encourage, you know, like, you say your grandparents or speak with somebody, try to speak. You know, we really encourage that. We want them to be going to the next level and speak. And a lot of the teachers that are teaching there now are previous students. They're young. They're pretty young.
Previous students of the Freedom School. And the languages itself started in 2014. So, yeah, thank you.
That's all. Thank you very much.
What percentage are speaking the language now?
Well, you know what? There's really, I would say maybe a third, maybe not even a third, that are trying to speak. And there might be a quarter that are fluent speakers, maybe.
Are there children that are fluent speakers?
Well, they're becoming fluent speakers. They're over at the Freedom School. Those are the ones that I'm talking about right now. At the Freedom School, they're all speaking. They have to speak.
From K to 8th grade,
yeah.
It's purely Mohawk, and so the children who attend that school are fluent speakers, second language learners.
So what language are they talking on the playground?
Okay, that's where our problem comes in. I would say 75, maybe 50-60% English, but as soon as we hear them speaking English, you just say it in Mohawk, and then they'll speak. They'll say it in Mohawk. And some of them are coming from, they're just starting there, like right from English and going into Mohawk Immersion School. And it's hard. It is a lot harder, but you can't just give up on those children. You have to, even if they want to start when they're like 10 or 20, you know, you have to start right from there. Because we have like a really nice chart where the syllables and the sounds of it, and it's not really easy to learn it, but it's kind of like, it's I don't know how you would say it. It's like our vowels. We can start with our vowels. A, E, I, O. So you go say, you put your, you start with your alphabet. Let me see. So you start with H. So you have your A, E, I, O. A, E, I, O. So you go ha, he, he, ha. Ha, he, he, ho. That's how you learn. That's how you learn the syllables, and then that's when you start to bring the words. Then you can put your words together.
And
go ahead.
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. And they did tell me that when I was there, someone mentioned to me that all of the native speakers of the language who spoke it as a first language pretty much are 70 to 100 years old, and there were even a couple of funerals while I was there in just a couple of weeks. So it's in a very critical situation, and they said even 70 in the 70s is young to be a first language speaker of Mohawk. So
one of the things you mentioned was you mentioned observing that it's a double wide trailer that's all set up like a home, and I think sounds like you may have addressed a problem that people have brought up again and again with other immersion programs, which is that, or other immersion schools, which is that the kids go there as English speakers. These are the ones I'm thinking of are for Irish Gaelic and Scottish Gaelic, so they come as English speakers. They go in there and they go to school all day and they come out, you know, fluent, you know, but they know no home language.
Mm-hmm.
And because you guys have set it up as essentially a home where you do home activities with the kids, I assume that's what happens. With the kids, they're able to go home and live their home life in the language. They have the language to do that, at least.
Mm-hmm.
There may be more complications, but they have that language. And that's rather unique, because it's been a persistent problem for the Gaelic, for the various Gaelic schools.
Yeah, it was
they only know how to go to school in Gaelic. They don't know how to do anything else.
I was really impressed with how they have the kitchen set up. They have a couch. It feels like a living room. There is a table with chairs that the kids eat around, and there's a playground outside. And they talk about cooking, about eating, and home things and real life things.
I wondered for a long time. I work with Shoshone people, and there are still some younger people, but not very young. And do Mohawk people remember how they used to talk to babies? Because the way you talk to babies in English and a lot of other languages I know, like Italian, is somewhat different. You were talking about baby talk. And so there's a way that that adults talk to each other, but if many societies have special ways of talking to younger children, that may not be the same. And that's not the same thing as distorting the language or corrupting it, but just a different way that you talk to babies.
I was thinking, we had different arguments on that at school. Mm-hmm. Okay, so do we try to teach them the baby way, or do we try to teach them full sentences?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my thing was, when I was at home, my mother didn't, she didn't say ee, or she didn't say those little words. She just spoke, and we just went along. But then you have the other argument, well, they need to take the word, and they need to, like in English, you need to take it and divide it three ways or something.
Separating more things.
You know, and it's, to me, that's hard.
But yeah,
so I just, we're freedom there. We kind of just do what we want, and we speak how we want there. And they seem to be having good results at the other place, at the other building. But I know what you mean, and I think a lot of it is in song.
Okay.
You know, like say when you're rocking the babies. Huh?
Yeah, that's what
you're
I mean.
You're rocking the babies.
Yeah, I don't mean making the language simple.
No.
I mean, like in English we might say, oh, what a cute little baby. And I know how to do that in Italian because that was my first language.
Okay.
You know, what you say. You make things little, and you talk about how cute everybody is and all that other kind of stuff. But that's different than the way you talk to adults.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, you're a cute little child, or you're a good good child. It's it's hard to interpret into English.
Yeah,
now.
Okay. So that's a part that some communities don't have anymore because they lost it. Couple of generations ago, but it's an important style that shows endearment, how you love the children and that warmth. And some languages have to regain that, but you seem to have it still, and that's really wonderful.
Some do, and a lot of times, like my mother will come into the language nest and she'll come to visit, and the kids all come running and they're climbing all over the top of her, you know. And she's speaking to them. Well, sometimes she'll even speak English to them. We're like, looking at her, Ma, what are you doing? And it's funny, then she'll start speaking Mohawk again.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really hard. Like what he was saying, so we're in a building. This is what I said last night. We're like in this cave, and we're all speaking Mohawk, and we're all happy in our lives, and we're like, we're making our biscuits, and we're speaking our language, we're singing, and we're laughing at the silly words we're saying, and then we go out, and then we gotta go back to this. It's almost like another world, and a lot of the parents out there, they don't speak, and so we try to really encourage it and say different words to them. And that's what I mean. A lot of them are previous students from the school, and that's why I was saying they're young. And that's where some of the language is lost, because they haven't heard like the old people speaking. So there's a lot of like it's less words. With me, I grew up in Catholic, but I had the language like my parents had the language, and that's why we're comparing. It's like some people that grew up traditional didn't even have the language, but they grew up with the, you know, drumming and the ceremonies and everything. And here me, I'm over here, and I just grew up like Catholic, but I had the language. And my aunt was a clan mother, but we used to go to the longhouse, but we went to church, and it's a different mindsetting. It's hard. It's like you're riding in two canoes. It's sometimes some way you have to go into one. You have to. It's really hard. Like my mother, she'll go to church on Sunday, and then she'll go to the ceremonies, and I'm like, how do you do that? Oh my gosh. It's hard. It's hard, but we're really trying. I really love it. This is my daughter right here, and she's 16. I have 5 children. I have 4 boys and 1 girl, and none of them speak. I'm ashamed of that, but in my generation, it was like, you know, trying to go to school and the business of raising your children and your partner that you choose to marry and live with, they might not do that, and you're busy working. It's just like, it's hectic. And if you don't go to, if you're not into the school, if you don't go to the Freedom School or to a school that has the language all the time, then you're lost. You're lost. And some of the children, like, oh, you don't understand that. I don't want to hear it. Don't talk to me. I don't understand that. My oldest son is kind of like that, right? Like, you speak to him in Mohawk and he goes, blah, blah, blah. He mocks you. He does that kind of like, because he doesn't have no idea what it means. But it's hard on him, and he feels bad about it, huh? Yeah. So.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much.